Welcome to Transformation Talks Podcast, powered by JMJ Associates. In this episode, we are delighted to invite you to join a conversation about Jacobs Engineering's long-held commitment to Beyond Zero Safety, featuring Craig Martin, former CEO of Jacobs Engineering Group, and JMJ founder, Jay Greenspan.
Craig Martin, it's a delight to be with you today. Before we get into all of what happened at Jacobs, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you end up as CEO of Jacobs?
I was born in Kansas, Dodge City. Grew up there in Kansas, went to KU, and then got an MBA at the University of Denver. Most of my early career was construction, and then I moved into construction management and then engineering construction. And I covered pretty much all the bases from the field, the office, then moved into president and then CEO. And it's interesting, the part of our discussion today is about safety, and where that all started for me was actually one of the very first guys I worked for on a job site, very focused on safety on a job site, did a pretty good job by my standards then. I have to tell you, when he was at home one afternoon, he put a ladder in a power line.
My goodness.
And it just struck me at that time, the whole question of safety was a 24/7 kind of question. And that would turn out to be really important as we started on this journey.
When you became CEO of Jacobs, could you just tell us what Jacobs was like?
It was founded in 47. It was a very sizable, substantial company by the time I became CEO in 2006. Around $4 billion in revenues, 25,000 employees in 15 countries, maybe close to 20.
And by the time you retired from that position?
Just at $12 billion and about 65,000 employees in 30 countries.
Tell us a little bit about the Jacobs safety journey prior to the stand that you took. How had it been since the 1940s and 50s and so on?
I can't really speak to the times prior to the early 80s, but in the early 80s, Noel Watson became the CEO of the company. And Noel saw that the safety performance of the company wasn't good. It was threatening the business, and he really aggressively got after trying to improve our safety performance. And he started at the fundamentals, and that's what we did for a long time. We were fairly successful at getting the numbers down. We certainly were able to stay in business, and we drove our costs down through a real focus on the basics of safety.
Since you were considered an excellent company by industry standards, what started to cause some internal questioning of how you were doing? Where did that come from?
It seemed to us that we were starting to hit a plateau. Safety was getting better every year, but we were growing faster than safety was getting better. And the result of that was that every year, we were likely to hurt more people than the prior year, even if we had that improvement in safety. We felt like we just had to do something different. If you grow it at, let's say, 15% a year and you improve safety 10% a year, you're going to hurt 4 or 5% more people every year, forevermore. And that's just not the kind of company we wanted to be. And it was clear that our focus on fundamentals, while it was good, was not sufficient. And that we had to do something different if we're going to make a difference. You know, we couldn't just keep doing the same thing and hope we would get dramatically better outcomes.
How did that viewpoint start to emerge? Was that something you and the executive team came up with?
It really emerged of our pressuring, in particular our field services folks, but the leadership team generally, to get dramatic improvements in their safety performance. And they came back and said, we're doing it as hard as we can. And it's just not going to get better. We all agree we got to do something different. And so we went out and looked for people who thought differently than we did. And ultimately, we engaged JMJ and set about learning to be a different kind of company.
A company of that size and that complexity and such a deep-rooted culture, there must have been some significant challenges you had to face as a team. Could you talk a little bit about that?
The transition was really convincing the team that we had to make that fundamental change from believing that the fundamental structure,
processes,
rules, procedures wasn't going to get us where we wanted to go. And we had to go from there to a culture, to a set of beliefs that would get us where we wanted to go. And we had to transition the leadership team and the people doing the work to get them to see this as something they wanted to embrace.
What was the beginning of that conversation? Any particular instances that stand out for you?
I wouldn't say necessarily any individual instance. There were things that you could see in the team as people began to get it. Once you kind of got to that point where you were a believer, it was easy to get others to believe that we really can make a difference, that we really can get to a culture of caring, and that we really can get to beyond zero. What would it be like if not only were we zero incidents and injuries, but if people got healthier, stronger, better every day?
It's good to say it, but it's another thing to make it real. What did it take to create such a significant shift in culture from your perspective?
From my standpoint, I just had the blind faith that if we persevered, people would see the merit and the power of what we were trying to accomplish. I was convinced if we gave people the opportunity to care and gave them the tools to apply that, we would get lots of people who believed in Beyond Zero and what we were trying to accomplish.
I know blind faith, but how did you present at the board meeting?
We had good support from our board from the get-go. They had heard over the years so much about the importance of safety. It was increasingly clear to the board that this was not only going to drive safety, but ultimately would drive performance across a broad spectrum. It was really at the senior leadership team that some of the challenges came out. Not that the people weren't committed and didn't want to achieve this, but there's been years of blame and shame game. We worked hard to be sure that we didn't do that. That may have taken as long as almost anything to really get ingrained in the system, that the person who's injured is a victim.
I suspect some of these executives, and they didn't want to fail, and they had to go with blind faith, like you said, is a tricky place to step into. How did it progress through the workforce?
I think it started with the workforce doubting that this was any different than anything else they'd been exposed to. There was a certain distrust or disbelief that there was anything involved here other than the company trying to make more money. And what we needed is a level of trust that sort of said they are serious, they do care, because as those folks bought in, it really made a difference.
With something like transforming the entire safety culture of a massive corporation, I think what you're saying is the senior leadership really has to stay the course and be consistent and show the workforce that this is a real change, not just the flavor of the month. Did you run into any of that with, say, workforce or even your contractors?
If you start with the mid-level leadership in the organization, who also had their share of disbelief, there was a strong belief, I think, initially that this would blow over. And the way to overcome that belief is not at all complicated. You just persevere. You don't let it get to be called a program, because safety is relentless. You don't fix it. It doesn't go away. You can't say, got that, we're done, let's move on.
How did the contractors relate to this?
It varied by contractor. There were contractors, particularly larger ones, and ones that routinely worked in industries where safety was a big consideration in the hiring or the contracting process. They fell in step pretty well. So when you got into the civil infrastructure or buildings or even pharmaceutical industrial kinds of clients, those contractors all mostly saw this as a cost and not as a benefit. Sometimes it took a stick. In most times, desire to have the work overcame the desire to not do what needed to be done. And we did have contractors come back after a year or two of working with us and say, you know, this really made a difference in our company.
I remember that Jacobs used to have commitment workshops for contractors, and there'd be 30 different contractors, the whole supply chain, in the room and talking about this from all different perspectives. I think Jacobs was doing this because they needed their entire supply chain all lined up for this, or else it was going to be hard for Jacobs to pull this off.
That's right. We decided that we needed to use some vehicle to get our customers and our supply base engaged and understanding what this was about. The workshops were actually highly effective in doing that.
What might other organizations experience in taking on this kind of pretty serious commitment to their organizational change?
I think the hardest thing to do in the early stages, at least, is to get away from the whole blame and shame thing. Most companies, and ours included, have all kinds of rules. And if you break the rule, you're bad and right. you get punished. I don't think that works very well anywhere. People need to have a reason why they want to follow that rule or that procedure. In the world we're talking about, the search for who caused that accident, quite often it came to the person who got injured. That's the opposite of a culture of caring. We had a big engineering operation, and most of the folks who choose to be engineers like rules, process, and procedure. And when you ask them not to enforce a breakdown in those processes and procedures in a punitive way, but instead improve them so they work better, and that's a hard change to make.
One of the things that I observed at Jacobs was major shift from blaming the person who got injured to having it be a breakdown of leadership. That became a part of Jacobs' culture. How did that take?
It was one of the hardest things we had to do. It goes back to a comment you made earlier. I mean, the executives are accustomed to accountability and control. Accountability and control can actually work against each other. I recall an incident we had on a job site where a young man stepped out on a piece of grading. The grading wasn't tied down. It twisted, and he fell 16 feet, and he was hurt bad. The reason he stepped out wasn't because he thought, oh, I'm going to step out on this grading and see if I can hurt myself. He thought he could get the job done a little more quickly and help the company. When you start talking about those kinds of accidents, you could either decide that he was just a dummy for getting out there on that grading, or you can figure out what the positive motives were for him doing what he's done and think about how you can change the system and the process, rules, and beliefs to cause a different outcome.
Sometimes people focus entirely on personal safety. Sometimes organizations focus almost entirely on process safety, and there needs to be that dual focus. That's a wide range to cover. I think you guys did it as best as possible.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
The company, because it had been built over time out of several acquisitions, we had parts of the business that were very involved in highly dangerous environments. Those parts of our company had gotten very good at process safety, but in some cases, their focus on personal safety wasn't very good at all. And then other parts of the company who had been in industries where the customer was very focused on personal safety, that we'd gotten better at personal safety, but process safety, we didn't even think about. We were able to bring those kinds of thinking together, probably to the benefit of the organization in lots of places, and places that might not even have gotten thought about.
I know that when you took this on, some of it was on blind faith. Some of it was because you saw some examples in other places where people had achieved levels of safety performance that was even beyond what you had experienced. Some of the leaders that are going to listen to this are probably confronting their own organizations and what they want. Sometimes it's helpful to have some visual idea or description. How does an incident-free or beyond zero culture look like or feel like? Could you just give us some texture to that so people can have a sense of what it might look like for them?
What it looked like for us was going back to a comment we talked about earlier, which is this giving people permission to care. I know it's odd, but I don't think most companies explicitly give their people permission to care. If you give that permission and then you encourage the behaviors that manifest from that, people begin to believe you're actually serious, that it's okay to care. That was a powerful part of what we saw as Beyond Zero doing. Very quickly, and this goes back to my story about my superintendent from 40 years ago or so, going home safe isn't adequate. When he goes home safe, you want him to come back safe. And if he goes home and puts a ladder in a power line, that's not going to work. And you can have all the safety discussion you want at the office, but a good friend, a valuable employee is not with us anymore. I really made sure we took it as a 24/7, 365 obligation to make sure people went home safe, but make sure they came to work safe. It just can't stop at the end of the workday. The other thing that we were able to get clear over time was that caring about safety and a culture of caring, allowing, giving people permission to care, also gave them permission to care about other things, the customer, the work, the public, the environment. There just really isn't any limit to what a caring culture can accomplish.
One of our clients at Chevron in El Segundo, the refinery manager, said that he experienced when the workforce feels that you honestly do care for them and your actions are consistent with it, that they show a reciprocal caring for the business. He said, there's no way I could have made that happen. It happened because they wanted. Did you experience some similarities like that?
Yeah,
people caring for the company and the business in ways that they wouldn't have before.
Absolutely. I can recall a video that I watched a few years into this process where the foreman on a particular job site had all gotten together for about an hour-long chat about Beyond Zero and a culture of caring. And they knew that the primary focus was still safety at that point in time. But when they got in the discussion about caring, it wasn't just about caring for safety. It was about caring for each other. They all saw this as them working together. And what was it? One of them described the thing, if Jack's having trouble picking something up, I'm going to go over there and help him carry it, even if it's not my job, because we care about each other. I thought that was very powerful.
One of the things people love and remember are stories. Are there any stories at Jacobs that you could share?
I'll share a couple, because they were just a couple of them, actually. They were very early in the process.
Okay.
So as we talked earlier, the whole organization struggled a little bit to understand what in the world Beyond Zero might mean. That was deliberate because we wanted people to think about not getting to zero, but getting beyond it. And one morning, I kind of walked into one of our offices. I think it actually was headquarters. And all of a sudden, all the little candy jars that people set out on the counter were gone. And instead, there were bowls of fruit. And one or two of the folks in the office had gotten together and said, you know, this candy can't be good for us, but fruit would be. Let's get rid of the candy and have fruit. For me, that was just priceless. I mean, it was spot on. Another early story, one of our employees who'd been through the commitment process, he was driving home from work and he drove by and there's a guy out on his yard, one of those riding lawnmowers, and he has his little girl in his lap. And our guy drove by, got about a half a block, turned around, drove back, got out of his vehicle and came up to the guy and stopped him momentarily. He said, I really don't want to get in your space, but have you thought about it? You're riding around with your girl. Neither one of you have eye or ear protection on. You don't have anything on your feet to protect you from potential hazards. And your little girl is incredibly vulnerable. Are you really sure that's what you want to be doing? The father who was, you know, first he was a little put off, as you can imagine, right? But he thought about it for just a minute or two. And then he turned to our guy and said, you know, you're right. And he shut the lawnmower down, got off, took the girl inside, came back out wearing eye and ear protection and shoes, and got back on the mower and finished the job. We told that story thousands of times because it was exactly what we were really trying to get to. This wasn't about Jacobs, but it was about caring. And it manifests both caring and courage.
That is amazing. I know there was a tragedy in the company. One of the engineers got unfortunately killed. I think his wife wanted it to make a difference for people. No one else should suffer like she did. Can you just briefly tell us that little story?
John, Kate's husband, was on a way to a client meeting.
This is
and he was, like the vast majority of our employees, always trying to help us out and get things done faster. So we were going to redesign a little bridge, and he decided that he'd stop on the way to the client meeting and measure the bridge. And he was by himself, and he got out, and he started measuring the bridge. And unfortunately, the steel tape that he was using slid off the bridge down into a power line for the train. As you know, that's a very high current, high voltage line, and it electrocuted him, and he died 3 days later. It's just horrific what he went through. But it was equally horrific what Kate, his wife, went through. And she came up with the idea that she'd just tell what happened from her perspective and we'd make a video of it. And so we did. Tremendously emotionally moving video. It did something that other videos and other presentations I've seen about safety didn't do. Because it was much more not about John, although it's clear John was a great guy, or what John did or didn't do, or how that, none of that was really relevant here. What was relevant was how damaging to Kate, John's parents, Kate's parents, the whole family, John's death was. As we showed people that video around the world, it had a tremendous impact because many cultures that we work in, death's not as uncommon as it is here. And the possibility you might die doing work is just one of those things. But if you start to think about the impact your death might have on your family, it changes your perspective. So that video got tremendous traction in places like India. And so I'm actually very proud of Kate and her achievement in conveying that message.
For leaders that are going to take this on, what would you advise them they need to bring to this personally?
First and foremost, don't let somebody let you make it into a program. You got to figure out what you want, and you got to stay the course and persevere. Over time, people will come to believe it. That person means it. This company means it. That's where they're going. That's who they want to be. I think it's really easy. And when you have a failure, for people to step back and say, see, it doesn't work. We got to do something different. And that's, you can't let that happen.
What are the traits then that you realize that if a leader is going to take this on, they need to exhibit?
What leaders need to do at any level is they need to make this concept of a culture of caring of personal to them. They have to integrate it. They have to make it part of who they are. They have to tell stories like the lawnmower story or Kate's story. And they have to accept that they're accountable. If they do that, you'll start to see greater and greater acceptance and energy and momentum in the system. You know, one of the things I thought was interesting is the safety minute. Now, Jacobs has been doing safety minutes for at least 25 years when I became CEO. We continued to do safety minutes, but there was a marked change in the safety minute as we went along in that culture of caring process, the Beyond Zero. Safety minutes became more personalized and more relevant and more thoughtful. People were investing in the safety moment, not as a box to be checked, but to genuinely share something that could make a difference.
Just to change course for a minute, I know that you and your wife, Diane, made a significant grant of your own money to the University of Kansas School of Engineering to really further improve safety. Can you tell us a little bit about what motivated that?
After I retired, we looked back and we felt like we'd been very, very fortunate and we were looking for a way to give back. And safety had been important to me and to my wife. It just seemed like that was a great way to contribute. And we needed to find something we thought would endure. Founding this National Center for Construction Safety was the vehicle we decided to use. And it's been great also to continue to be involved. It's nice that there's something you can be engaged in that keeps the momentum up.
And also right on cutting edge, not just maintaining what you did. Is there anything else that you'd like to say to the many people who are listening to this podcast, are thinking about their own leadership, their own organizations, the people that count on them?
If you're listening, you already care. And so all you got to do is turn it loose. Just let it go. And I think you'll be shocked how powerful. It's just amazing what you can do if you care and you let people around you care and you show that you care. And it's contagious. You know, caring breeds caring.
You're a clear demonstration of that. I just would like to thank you on behalf of all the people who are listening to this and the difference you've made to them, and you know, really thank you for all the people that will be affected by this in most positive and wonderful ways. So thank you so much, Greg.
Thank you for listening to Transformation Talks podcast. Head to jmj.com for episodes, insights, and more.